Welcome back to Supporting Both Ends of the Lead. I'm Caroline, a certified animal behaviourist.
And I'm Dr. Linda Blair, a clinical psychologist.
We're here to bring you today's double dose of well-being for you and your dog.
And it's time to get started, don't you think? Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to our podcast. We love talking to you. I hope it's as enjoyable for you, or even half as enjoyable as it is for us. Today, we're going to talk about something which probably sounds like it's more a people thing, so that end of the lead, but you're going to be surprised it isn't. We're going to talk about siblings. And what I'd like to talk about first, for those of you who are contemplating, you have one child and you're contemplating having more, or you were an only child and thinking, oh, I wish I'd had a sibling. I want to pose an interesting question. Is it a good idea to listen to your child? Because even you asked for this, whether you ended up with siblings or not when you were small, to have another sibling. Well, the answer is, from the child's point of view, no. Isn't that surprising? Because everybody, I hear parents all the time talking, saying, oh, I really ought to have another one. Well, that your child will also say, yeah, I'd love to have a little brother or sister for about, oh, maybe 24, 48 hours after you bring it home. And then they won't. And the reason is that all mammals, including dogs, and including us, those are the main ones we talk about, want to be the center of attention from to their principal carers when they're dependent. It's a relatively longer amount of time in your overall lifespan for us humans than it is for dogs, but it's still a period of time. And therefore, if there are competing interests, and for that read siblings, then jealousy, anger, and actually the desire for survival raises its ugly head, and sibling rivalry is inevitable. Now, I'll talk to you later about how you can use sibling rivalry as one of the most powerful parenting tools you have for teaching your child a skill which they will thank you for later, I promise you. But I'd just like to ask you, Caroline, what about adding a sibling, that is not necessarily a blood sibling, but a sibling dog in your family? Because I always thought you should have two.
Well, I think you've pretty much just covered what I could cover about dogs as well. When you say, you know, about the potential for sibling rivalry, we can have that between our dogs as well. I'm going to talk later about sort of if you were to get two puppies from the same litter. Right now I'm talking about having two dogs that come at different times into your life. So they're not coming from the same breeder or same, you know, rescue center where they've been put together as one litter.
Because that's most common, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Most people, I mean, it's hard when you go and meet those puppies if you are buying from a breeder to not want to bring them all home. But most people will bring one and then later on have the addition of another. Mm. And I think the questions that I most often get asked when people are wondering is when is the right time to add that second dog? They also tend to ask, oh, should they get a dog of the opposite sex to the current dog that they have there? And we know that actually sort of studies show that dogs of both sexes can live happily together, although two female dogs tend to fight more. If you're going to have them, but it really does depend on developmental stages of both dogs and where they are in their life when they're put together. Often we ask about if getting a second dog will fix the current dog separation anxiety, and this flows quite nicely from last week's podcast when we were talking all about separation. But I think the most important things we need to first of all focus on is whether you as a household, as a family, are able to give everything that second or third or fourth or maybe seventh, eighth or ninth dog, depending on how many dogs you want to share your life with, how much you are able to give them. Can you give them the financial commitment? Because two dogs is double the cost of insurance, of food, of any vet bills. If you have pet professionals looking after your dogs when you're not there, all of those things, we're doubling. And time and attention, really, really important. Do you have the time to put into training this new dog, just as you did your first dog? Do you have the time to be able to walk them? And ideally, not always together. And I'll talk about that a bit more later.
And does the first... surprising me already, Caroline. I'm looking forward to this. I'm glad we don't rehearse these because I get surprised every time. Carry on.
Does the first dog have an issue that the second might imitate? And we can talk about separation anxiety there, or it could just be that the first dog is going to bark at every dog they see. You're going to find that your second dog most likely will start to bark at every dog they see pretty quickly. And also, does your current dog cope physically with another dog? We often say that when we put young puppies with an older dog, they get a new lease of life. But there can be a limit on that in terms of if you've got a really senior dog who is finding life a little bit more tricky to navigate through arthritis or whatever other conditions they might have, having a young dog bouncing around all over the place might make them feel not very happy. So it's really important to think about all these different things when we're thinking about bringing that second dog in.
And of course, you have such an advantage, don't you, as a dog parent, because you can choose what to bring in. When we have another child, you know, it's luck of the draw. You may think you have some control because of your genetics, but you don't. It's random what you're going to get. That's really interesting.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we can choose, obviously, what sex we want to dog to bring into our home. And we can choose what breed of dog we want to come into our home. But we can't always see how a dog is going to turn out. And you might go back to the breeder that you got your first dog from and be kind of imagining you're going to get this carbon copy of the current dog you have. But there's an element of nature and nurture going on here. And you're not always going to get the same dogs within secondary litters, even within the same two parents. So we do have a little bit of an element of control here, but not as much as you might think.
That is a good point. Okay, so it is more like having your own second child where you think, oh, it'll be all right. I will tell you something fun. I don't know if this happens with dogs, though. If you, I can guarantee you that when a client comes in and has a issue they want to deal with their family, they'll say, well, you know, the first child, oh, so much effort and so much difficulties. That child is a difficult child. But you know, my second one, a breeze. Well, it is, that's not true. What's happened is you've learned so much as a parent. So you're so much more able to not do the things that aren't necessary, but concentrate your energy on what is necessary. You can foresee the outcome of a lot of problems. I don't know if that happens with dog ownership, but it sure does with having children.
Well, that's a really interesting one, because I was talking to a friend recently, because I'm a mum of a toddler now, and she has a toddler the same age and a child who's a few years older. And she was saying that the toddler has been so easy because she just kind of from day one had to just get on with whatever the situation was, because the toddler needed so much. The older one needed so much because she was a toddler when this toddler was a baby. That sounded a bit more complex than I meant it to sound. But so because their first child was, say, 3, 4 when the new one was born, she needed so much more attention. She needed that input. She was starting to, you know, explore things a lot more. And the baby was very easy to just plonk down. Whereas I think what can happen is reverse when you bring a puppy into a already existing dog home, because it tends to be that the puppy needs all of that attention to stop them chewing the furniture, house training them, taking them to get used to the world. And the older dog can sometimes feel a bit left out, can feel like their nose has been put out of joint.
Well, that's interesting. Okay. Well, certainly the older child does feel in a humans that their nose is out of joint because they want all the attention. They're used to it. They're the only child in the family, no matter how many kids you have, or even if you just have one, they're the only one that has your exclusive attention and loses it. Because just one never loses it. The rest of them share from the beginning. So they're much more able to expect that you won't be there for them 24/7, but it's quite a blow to a first child. So on the one hand, they will be put out not long after this cute baby, which turns out to be stealing the attention they wanted, comes into their household. But on the other hand, that new baby offers them opportunities to get lots of praise from their parents, because you can, especially if the gap is bigger, it's more than 3 years, and that older child can do a few things themselves, so you can, they can, quote, help. And that's a very good thing for parents to do, is to encourage the older child to help, but not exclusively. Because if you do it exclusively, then that poor child grows up thinking, I don't have any worth except insofar as I serve other people, which is dreadful. I don't know if any of you are going, oh my God, I see it now from your own childhood. But it's really important that you still make a huge fuss over the drawings they bring home from school, the older child, or the fact that they set the table has nothing to do with the baby, so that they get self-esteem for being who they are, not for being a helper. So that's quite a different thing, but it does give you a tool to make, in the long run, make life richer for an older child, even though they will feel deprived initially. That is true. But for me, and I don't know how much this is for dogs, but for people, sibling interactions, which I like to use instead of sibling rivalry, because yes, there's rivalry for your attention, but there's all kinds of interactions between siblings, teaching each other, learning how to co-opt each other into having more than, you know, 1 + 1 makes more than 2 in terms of projects and things. But what you're doing is laying the groundwork for how they'll act in small social groups for the rest of their life. So when there are scraps and arguments, what you never should do is just go in and sort it out. That doesn't teach a thing. Instead, you let them both cool down. Now, this part probably is dogs, but this part isn't. You then get them back together, and if you can achieve this, Caroline, you really have me impressed. You get each of the siblings to say how they think the other one is feeling about this problem, because you're going to teach them empathy. And empathy, oh my God, there's nothing better in terms of being popular at school, in terms of being chosen at work for things. You know, empathy goes so far. And interesting research on humans shows that social skills are more closely tied to not just happiness, not just flexibility in terms of what you can adapt to, but even things like your earnings and stuff, more than your IQ. Isn't that amazing? So your EQ, your emotional quotient, your social skills, is more important than your IQ. So you've got this good playground. And by the way, those of you who are choosing just to have one child, or just have one child, maybe not by choice, you can, which is 40%. Did you know that? 40% of the UK are now one child households. But anyway, you can get the same thing nearly, very close, by going on holiday with other families, by having your child mix a whole lot with peers, and not just peers of the same age, but different ages, you know, a year or two above and below, so that you're mimicking the situation of siblings. It doesn't quite copy it, because of course your back isn't turned as often, and they have to sort it out without you there when it's friends that you invite over. But it's a great thing. So don't think you have to make the choice of several in order to get social skills. No way. Do dogs have better social skills when there are a couple of them?
It can depend. And I was just going to say, actually, in terms of children, if they are solo children, having dogs in their life can surely be a great opportunity for them to learn empathy and learning about the needs of people around them, because they learn such great caring sort of responsibilities when the dog needs to be groomed or walked or given their food. Do you think that that would play a part?
That's brilliant. That is so brilliant because you're paying attention. You're getting the child to pay attention to cues which aren't just facial. Because with humans, we tend to just look at the face or listen to the words. But of course, body language is really important, and that's what a dog gives you, because you see, is his tail wagging, is the ears flat, I don't know, is the hair up, you probably know, but you definitely know better than me, what are the signals that the dogs pick up?
Yeah, and this is one of the most important things that we can teach children. And I'm part of an organisation, Kids Around Dogs, and we are really trying to help all schools to put this into their curriculum, because dog bites are on the increase, particularly for children. And we want children to learn how to read dogs so that they do know when to approach or when to not approach. Yeah. There can be really simple things like we see dogs' tails wagging and we think that automatically means something positive. But dogs' tails can move when they're also feeling unsure or uncertain or angry even. So it is really important for our children to be able to look at signals that our dogs are giving, and get to know the dogs, and also always ask permission before they say hello to dogs that aren't in their home, that aren't their family.
So you're
dog.
Teaching respect, aren't you?
Yeah.
So respect for other creatures, that's just right behind empathy in terms of importance. That's beautiful. Also, maybe you can answer a question for me. One of my children had a lot of respiratory illness, which meant he was in hospital a lot. And there was this wonderful person in this big teaching hospital in London that used to bring, I don't know if they can now, but bring in a dog. And I always thought you had to stroke a dog in order to relax, but the children relaxed visibly, seemed to tolerate their pain immediately better when this little terrier came in. What was going on?
Yeah, it's incredible. And there are various different schemes that do help to assess and approve the right sort of dogs to go into schools, into hospitals, into care homes, all different places where we can all benefit from having animals around us. I think, one of the lovely things is dogs that are being used now to help children with lack of confidence in reading, for example, and the dog just sitting there near them and the child being able to read to the dog without any judgment. And this goes back to a kind of start of our relationship together, Linda, where we worked so much on mindfulness and mindfulness of people living alongside their dogs, and non-judgmental approaches to things is so important, isn't it? And so having an animal come in to the hospital who doesn't know that they're poorly, doesn't know that they might have this treatment coming up tomorrow, or that they've lost hair or whatever might be going on for that child. Yep. That dog comes in and automatically has a tail wag for them and brings some joy to them, even by just seeing them afar. And they probably also have a bit of anticipation when they see the dog that they may get to give it a treat or give it a stroke, if the dog might enjoy that too.
Oh, that's so nice. And you're making a case again for the value of just one dog. You don't have to have two, do you?
Absolutely. And I think there are obviously some benefits for dogs living together. For example, this is a little bit of a stat for you. Dachshunds have a predisposition to have a condition called IVDD, which is a back issue. And studies have shown that if they live together in multi-dog households, they're less likely to get that. Now, I think that's mainly because of the fact that they are probably going to be slimmer because they're playing more. They're more active, and particularly in their younger age. So again, though, we don't have to only have our dogs, have multiple dogs for our dogs to have social interactions. You can choose that carefully through meetups with people in local dog parks, through going to training classes, through friends and family who have dogs. So if your household isn't ready for a second dog, or your dog isn't ready for a second dog in their space all the time, perhaps you have an adolescent who finds it quite overwhelming to be around other dogs a lot because they just don't know how, they don't have an off switch at the moment, then having another dog in the home might be just too much for everybody. But having short, careful interactions with a calm adult dog could be something that's really beneficial in teaching them the right way to interact. And that kind of leads in a little bit into the littermate syndrome, in terms of why we can sometimes, if we either get two puppies from the same litter or we get two puppies of a very similar age at the same time, why we can sometimes get challenges happening. Because people tend to think that sort of getting two puppies together might make things easier, that they'll tire each other out, keep each other company, and that if you're training one, you may as well be training two. But what do we say, Linda, to parents who are maybe expecting twins or a large number of babies, or we say, oh, they're pregnant and their first baby isn't even two yet?
What, you mean in whether you get a dog?
No, in terms of is it going to be an easy ride for a parent who's expecting twins, multiple births, or two under two? Is that going to be an easy ride for them? Or do we go, oh, wow, you're brave, or, oh, yeah, good luck?
We're saying with dogs, get two, and
it'll be fine.
And you've really hit on something important, which is that the closer the age difference between your siblings in a family, then the more intense will be their interactions, because their needs will more often be the same at about the same time. So they're going to be screaming for ascendancy, to be me first, and therefore take it out on the siblings. So twins is the very hardest of all, because they'll almost certainly have the needs at the same time. And, you know, everybody thinks, oh, twins have a secret close bond. On average, twins are less close, isn't that interesting, than siblings, although they do have more shared history, of course.
Yeah.
But the more the needs are the same. So I suppose you would think about that with dogs too, the more
your
dog.
Absolutely. Yeah. And this is the thing we talk about when we've got dogs who are of a similar age, sort of either from the same litter or two puppies quite close in age. We talk about it as resource holding potential, which is basically how likely is one going to potentially win a fight over an item. So maybe there could be a stuffed Kong on the floor. Which of the two dogs is going to be more likely to win that item if they were to fight over it? And as the dogs develop at the same rate, just as you were saying with twins there, like as the dogs develop at the same rate, they're going through those changes where they start to vie a little bit more for the objects or the affection or the attention that's available. And so they're more likely to get into those kind of over the top play. Plus, they've got really good at playing as puppies together. And puppy play is really rude. It's over the top. It's kind of like practicing fighting. It's not nice, calm, relaxed play that adult dogs would enjoy together. And when they play so much in that twosome together, they're going to kind of, that's going to be their style. That's going to be the way that they think that play should occur. Whereas if you have one dog, and I'm talking obviously about bringing puppies into your life here rather than a rescue, if you get them around lots of different ages of dogs, they're going to learn and be taught how to play appropriately with all ages of dogs.
I love that. And that, of course, that would apply to humans, except, of course, we don't play all the way through our lives with our siblings, probably in the same way. But you do make me realize that when parents are thinking about having a second child or a third child, they're often thinking of the child. But actually, if you have two teenagers nearly the same age, which is what you're producing if you have two kids close together, then you've got the problem all over again, because they're going to need you at 3 a.m. to bring them home from a party that didn't go right or whatever else. And so it does keep it with humans. It recurs. It comes in cycles where the intensity of the rivalry recurs. As I say, there's good things and bad things about anything you choose and when you're producing a family. I hope I made that clear at the beginning.
And Linda, does it make any difference in if those, say, if the twins or the children close in age are of different sex?
If the gender, I was going to say that, because when you said earlier, two girl dogs, two gender female dogs, I don't know what we say nowadays, are more likely to fight. The same gender siblings are more intense, and I always use the word intense, because the more intense the relationship as children, even though it's negative usually then, the more chance there is for a really close relationship later. So you always, everything that looks bad also has a good, and I don't want anybody to not choose what they want in terms of producing a family, because it's a balance. For example, kids close together, you get all the hard work over with sooner. You know, that kids far apart, you get a helper. I mean, it always is back and forth. But if you're the same gender, you're more likely to have the same needs, especially when you get into the older part of childhood. So you're right. The relationship, the rivalry is more intense when the gender's the same. So I was interested. I really perked up when you said two females. Is it true for two males?
So that's more if the males are neutered, they're going to be less likely to, according to the study, they're less likely to be as competitive. So it is all kind of obviously a lot of dependency again on what age those dogs are brought together, what age they're neutered, what age they and I'm not saying that I'm of the thought mind of keeping our dogs entire for as long as we can to help them behaviorally progress to be the fully maturated being that they need to be. But sometimes, you know, if you've got two males of the similar age living together and they aren't neutered, that's when you're going to get more of that competitive energy going on.
Okay, so it is similar to humans, not being the same.
We're not going around neutering.
Same gender, close in age, things that require help at the same time in the case of humans, that is a potential for more intense rivalry. You also said earlier in the podcast, well, we're talking about this because it's really interesting to me, and I bet you we're going to have the opposite here of what it is for dogs versus people. You said, well, if you get your third dog or your fourth dog or your seventh dog, you were sort of laughing. But I have always heard that if you more than two dogs, they start to bond with each other more than with you. Now, that's also true with human families. And in fact, when you get more than four, you tend to get two mini families or three mini families, because 3 to 5 is about the right number of kids that bond closely. So you can have, like if you had 11 kids, for example, God help you, you would have three probably mini families in there, as well as interactions of all 11. In humans, that's a good thing, because our job as parents of humans, you may not want to hear this, is to become redundant. We are more likely, let's be straight and honest here, to die before our kids. We don't want to leave them dependent on us. How awful would that be? You want them to forge their lives in the world. So if they're close to their siblings, they've got someone they're likely to be with longer than they are with you. Sibling relationships are the longest ones you have in your life. So it's a good thing there. It's an asset if you choose to have a larger family. What about dogs? Is it true that they bond with each other when you start having more than two?
Yeah, and it can do, particularly when that can be one of the challenges, again, that people experience if they bring home multiple dogs from one litter, because they have grown up from day one together and they can kind of rely on each other. I think the most important thing to note here is that obviously for our dogs, no matter what age of dogs you're mixing together in a multi-dog household, they will... they could go at any time. You know, we unfortunately, our dogs' lives are incredibly short. Mm-hmm. And so if you're bringing in a puppy into a home with a dog that's maybe 5 or 6, if you have that puppy and that dog walked every single day together, they're always left home alone together, they do everything together, that young puppy, again, just like as you said with the first child knew all the attention. The first dog knew also how to be alone. The first dog knew how to walk in the world on its own and knew how to be left home alone. The second dog didn't. And wow. So that second dog is going to lose that companion at some point, more than likely before itself. And so what we need to do is to make sure that all dogs in a group aren't too hyper-dependent on each other, that they are more dependent on us humans, and able to have those interactions where they can be left at home comfortably just as a solo dog, or in a mixture of two or three of your multi-dogs that you have, and that they can also go out confidently into the world as just a solo dog as well.
Gosh, you've explained something, because I once separated my two dogs in terms of where they went when we went away for a weekend. It was, I'm afraid, for financial reasons, not very nice, but I did. And it was the one who was never without the other that suffered. And the other one was absolutely fine. Yeah. Now you've really taught me something. Okay. And also that means that wouldn't we get a nice special little relationship if we took one of our dogs on a walk alone? I mean, wouldn't we see things?
Absolutely. And I think really lovely for your initial dog to get that one-to-one time that they used to get all the time. Yes. But also it gives you an opportunity to focus on the skills that the younger dog or the new dog needs to also learn by bonding with you. And it's just, you know, this doesn't have to be every single day, but at least a few times a week, take each dog individually out into the world and leave each dog individually at home, because that will mean that you have less panic mode that can occur when one dog passes later on.
That is so amazing and so, again, redolent of what I teach. I love doing this because I'm thinking all over again about the talks I give about siblings, because one of the things I always suggest is that when parents can carve out time, that once a month you take one kid only out for a pizza or a tea or whatever you want to do, or go to a film or something. So that they get that one-on-one time, whether they're the eldest or farther down. But I never realized how useful it is for the others. I didn't think of that. Gosh, thank you. That's so interesting. Okay. Talk revised. That's great. I think we've woven together today really nicely the issue of siblings or companions in the same house, if you will, of both humans and dogs, don't you?
Absolutely. No, it's been a really lovely conversation. And I think that it's just hopefully, well, my just one thing for today would be hopefully that it's made you really think about inviting a second dog into your home or mm-hmm. further down the line, more and more dogs, just to make sure that you are going to be ready for that financial time, attention, commitment, not just the fact that it's there to help give your dog some more companionship.
I love that. My one thing is that whatever family you have already, before you think about changing it, I would like you to pause and think of all the assets of what you already have and how you can build on those. Then you can make any decision you like. But it's always so good to stop and say, what I have is bounteous. Can I see how?
Brilliant. Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, everybody, for listening in today. And we'd love to hear about your multi-dog or people households, whether you have some interesting different groups going on, whether there's any fun stories to tell. So please do share with us.
And also about if you've introduced another dog into your household when you already had one or two. We'd love to hear how that went and what you learned, because, of course, we'll learn too.
Fantastic. Until next time, guys, thank you so much for listening and enjoy your walk.
Bye-bye.